Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ira Melman reporting a state of emergency declared in a North African country. Tunisia's president says his country is not safe from further extremist attacks and has declared a national state of emergency to avoid what he says is a risk of collapse. President Al-Baji Khalid El-Sabsi. His speech Saturday came just over a week after a gunman at the popular beach resort of Sousse attacked foreign tourists, killing 38 people, most of them from Great Britain. The president said the state of emergency would last for 30 days. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and his Iranian counterpart Mohammad Javad Zarif met for about an hour late Saturday in Vienna.
One thing ISIS has proven is their ability.
The director general of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Yukiya Amano, told reporters earlier in the day that he expects a complete report from his team within 6 months on the possible military dimensions of Iran's nuclear program. Amano said he saw progress when he visited Iran on Thursday, but that more work needed to be done. Nevertheless, his comments were seen as a positive development by analysts assessing whether the talks between Iran and the global powers can come up with an agreement by a deadline that has been set for Tuesday. The Greek finance minister has accused Athens creditors of terrorism. Yanis Varoufakis told the Spanish El Mundo newspaper that what the creditors are doing with Greece has a name, he said. He said it was terrorism. However, Varoufakis said he was sure an agreement with the creditors would be reached because failing to agree would be too costly. This is VOA News. The ongoing Taliban offensive in Afghanistan demands a reassessment of the Obama administration's current plan to draw down U.S. forces. That, according to U.S. Senator John McCain during an Independence Day visit to the country's capital, the Republican told reporters that Afghan national forces are fighting bravely but suffering heavy losses in the field, especially since ISIS is in the mix, he said. American and international troops have already stopped playing a combat role, remaining as trainers for local forces. The international numbers will be reduced further at the end of 2016, but McCain said reductions should be based on conditions on the ground. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, wearing battle dress for the first time in over a year, said Saturday that Egypt had foiled an attempt by the Islamic State group to seize territory and set up an extremist state with its recent assault on the military in the troubled northeastern part of the Sinai Peninsula. The Associated Press reports that the Egyptian president was dressed in combat fatigues. He had said that he hung up for good when he ran for president. The report says the general turned politician met members of the army and delivered a televised speech to troops in Sinai, his first public comments on Wednesday's unprecedented attack. He said the group had tried to announce an Islamic State in their concept, an Islamic State in Sinai. El-Sisi praised the troops for foiling a very big plan. The army said 17 soldiers and over 100 militants were killed in Wednesday's brazen attack in Sinai, although before the release of its official statement, several senior security officials from multiple branches of Egypt's forces in the area had said that scores more troops also died in that fighting. The assault, which is claimed by an Islamic State group affiliate, lasted an entire day and was unprecedented in its size and coordination. The attack hit a string of army checkpoints that involved multiple suicide bombings and the siege of a main police station with heavy weapons. UNESCO's World Heritage Committee meeting in Germany said Saturday it has designated 6 cultural sites for addition to its World Heritage list. 2 of the sites are in Iran, 1 each in China, Singapore, the Republic of Korea, and Mongolia. The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, bestows the designation to recognize global significance and to help in preservation. UNESCO has approved the inscription on the World Heritage List of more than 1,000 sites in more than 160 countries worldwide, from the Taj Mahal to the Great Barrier Reef to Stonehenge. I'm Ira Melman.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Once you are a Muslim, you are entirely controlled by Quran and Sunnah of Holy Prophet Muhammad SAW. And you should live in peace and harmony with your fellow Muslims and even the non-Muslim alike.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari calls on the Muslim community to condemn the violence carried out by Boko Haram.
Nous avons une structure de partage de renseignements. Nous avons une cellule de liaison au niveau militaire.
The French president says military intelligence sharing must be intensified.
French President François Hollande wraps up talks on terrorism in Cameroon. We'll have a report.
It becomes very hard to protect an individual. So I think what is needed is to find who hates these clerics and who wants them dead.
And a Ugandan human rights lawyer says the country's police need help from abroad to find those behind the killings of Muslim clerics over the past 3 years. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has called on the Muslim community in the country to condemn the violent activities of the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. His call followed the recent surge in the militants' orchestrated suicide bombings since the beginning of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Sheikh Abdullahi Balalao, the national chairman of the prominent Muslim group Jibwis, welcomed Buhari's call. He told me the clerics would not be deterred in their determination to denounce the violence carried out by Boko Haram.
We have to accept that kind of call from an authority. President Muhammad Buhari has called upon Muslims to preach according to Quran and the Sunnah of Holy Prophet Muhammad SAW. And those who are going against the teaching of Holy Quran and the teaching of Holy Prophet Muhammad SAW, they should be condemned. Once you are a Muslim, you are entirely controlled by Quran and Sunnah of Holy Prophet Muhammad SAW. And you should live in peace and harmony with your fellow Muslims and even the non-Muslim alike. So with preaching, you can call people with wisdom, preach them what Allah has said in the Holy Quran and what Prophet Muhammad has said. So on our part, under this organization, we are trying our possible best to see that our teachings is in line with the doctrine of Quran and that of the Sunnah of Holy Prophet Muhammad SAW. We cannot go beyond that.
Some people have expressed concern that since the beginning of this violence carried out by Boko Haram, prominent leaders, Muslim clerics in Nigeria, seem to be afraid of their lives and have failed to condemn Boko Haram act of violence and terrorism. What do you say to them?
No. We have done that. We have said it's not Islamic. What you are doing, if you want to teach people, if you want to tell them the goodness of Islam, is not the way you will present Islam, then you are giving Islam a bad name. So we have been telling the world that if you want to teach Islam, if you want to present Islam to the Muslim world or to the non-Muslim, then you cannot present Islam with this kind or with the way they are presented. So a lot of things they are doing is going against the teaching of Islam. But what we are saying with this, if the government can identify them, let them come on table, let them sit together to decide or to have understanding that will bring to an end of this kind of violence. By sitting on the table and discuss with their leaders, the government knows them very well, they know their sponsors, then let them come and discuss with them so that this thing would come to an end.
Some Nigerians have called on Muslim leaders like you to encourage people living in parts where Boko Haram occupy to cooperate with the military in an effort to defeat Boko Haram. What do you say to that?
I am still with what the government are doing to ensure that this violence has come to an end. You cannot only use force. By using force, you are using force, but still, that kind of creed, that kind of akida is still with them. Our own understanding is let them fetch them out, let them bring them to table for a discussion, understanding, so that other people will not embarrass their way of living. Other people will not come to accept their teachings. If you flush them out, there are a lot of people that will accept that kind of teaching. But if you can sit with them on the table to discuss with them and understand what is their mission, then bring the Islamic scholars to discuss with them, tell them that what they are doing is un-Islamic. But we cannot do this unless when the government come in and bring them to table. Then the government can invite the senior Islamic scholars so that they can discuss with them at length.
How ready are the senior Muslim clerics like yourself to help the government to negotiate with Boko Haram to find a solution to this crisis?
We are ever ready. Without peace and harmony, we cannot even practice our religion. We are ever ready. Anytime the government can invite us, that these are the people of Boko Haram, and you are the Islamic scholars, what is Islam about? Let them tell what is in their mind. Let them bring it out so that the Islamic scholars can address it once and for all, and then the government will take the next action. We are ready. Anytime the government feel like inviting us, then we can accept that invitation. But we are saying this thing can come to an end when government and those people will come to a table for a discussion.
Sheikh Abdullahi Bala Lau is the national chairman of the prominent Muslim group Jibwis. He spoke with me from Adamawa State in northeastern Nigeria. Meanwhile, French President François Hollande wrapped up talks in Cameroon late Friday on the fight against terrorism, mainly on the Nigerian Islamic group Boko Haram. As Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports for VOA, from the Cameroonian capital Yaoundé, the visit was greeted by anti-French protests.
Mr. Hollande is calling for more international support in the fight against Boko Haram in Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad and Niger.
Nous avons une structure de partage de renseignements, nous avons une cellule de liaison au niveau militaire.
The French president says military intelligence sharing must be intensified. He says French air forces now carry out regular surveillance of the zone where Boko Haram operates and are ready to provide information and pictures about Boko Haram movements. Mr. Hollande added that the humanitarian situation of refugees and internally displaced persons is getting worse by the day.
Et je voudrais que la communauté internationale en soit elle-même pleinement informée du nombre de réfugiés.
The French president says Cameroon is receiving tens of thousands of refugees, especially from Nigeria, who struggle with internally displaced people for survival and subsistence, adding that Cameroon needs urgent help from the international community. Cameroon estimates that in addition to 50,000 Nigerian refugees, there are over 100,000 internally displaced people. Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, says his country's development has been seriously hampered by Boko Haram terrorism, but that he is committed to eradicating the group and needs international support.
Face aux attaques de cette secte barbare, le Cameroun n'a pas fléchi. Je salue ici la bravoure et le dévouement de nos soldats qui ont infligé à l'ennemi.
He says Cameroon will never surrender and will make sure Boko Haram is crushed. Mr. Biya says Cameroon's military has made sure that not even an inch of the country goes to Boko Haram, but acknowledges the terrorist group has continued to attack with impunity. Presidents Biya and Hollande signed 4 economic, military, and cooperation agreements to improve ties that have been marred by suspicions France only exploits Cameroon. Before Mr. Hollande arrived in Yaoundé, Cameroonians in the economic capital Douala destroyed a statue of Free French General Leclerc, who during the Second World War fought in French Equatorial Africa and helped liberate Paris from Nazi Germany. Cameroon was Mr. Hollande's final stop of a two-day trip to Africa, which also included visits to Benin and Angola. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
With about 4 months to go before critical elections, observers say Burkina Faso's transitional government must focus on organizing the ballot and promoting a peaceful climate. The elections will come a year after one of Africa's longest ruling leaders, Blaise Compaoré, was swept from power in a civilian uprising against his bid to seek a fifth term. VOA's Mariama Diallo has more from the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
Nearly a year after a civilian uprising ousted Mr. Compaoré, Burkina Faso's transitional government is gearing up for presidential elections next October. But recent tensions between Prime Minister Yacouba Isaac Zida and the RSP, the Presidential Security Regiment, have put the country and political observers on alert. Cynthia O'Hayan is the West Africa analyst for the International Crisis Group. From Ouagadougou, she told VOA there are risks that should be acknowledged and mitigated as quickly as possible.
This tension, this difficulty between the prime minister and the RSP could actually threaten the stability of the country. It has created many crises in the past, especially in February and in December last year.
Mr. Zida has threatened to disband the regiment that both he and former President Compaoré once belonged to. But the PM has since changed his tone and said the group is important to security. Recently, gunshots were heard fired into the air from inside the camp of the RSP, allegedly to protest the questioning of two RSP leaders about rumors of attempts to arrest the prime minister. Marcel Tankono is the president of M21, a civil society organization that helped to topple President Compaoré.
Véritablement, il se passe quelque chose de pas normal entre le Premier ministre Yacouba Isaac Zida et le RSP. Qu'est-ce qu'on lui reproche? Nous ne comprenons
pas. Aziz Sana is a member of parliament from Burkina Faso's National Transitional Council. He says the general feeling is mixed whether to keep or disband the RSP. But something needs to be done about the regiment. Beside these tensions, crisis group analyst O'Hayan said there are other risks regarding the new electoral code, which says those who supported President Compaoré's bid to amend the constitution cannot run for office in the next election.
The electoral calendar is very tight, and there's also a risk that if the electoral code creates a lot of controversies, if there's a lot of appeals against candidates, there's also a risk that this could delay the electoral process. And if there's a gap, some actors might want to take advantage, or the ones that are in power now could also take advantage of the gap and try to keep themselves in power.
Burkina Faso's transitional president, Michel Kafando, released a statement this week calling for calm. He says he's committed to free and transparent elections, refuting claims that his government wants to prolong the current transition. Mariama Diallo in Dakar for VOA News.
Ugandan human rights lawyer says the country's police need help from abroad to find and arrest those behind the killings of 9 Muslim clerics over the past 3 years. That number includes 3 prominent Muslim clerics killed since December following reports they were on a hit list targeting them for death. Human rights lawyer Ladislaw Rakafuzi told me that efforts by the Ugandan police to arrest the killers have been insufficient, although more than 25 people have been arrested in connection with the killings.
has been very, very difficult because they have already arrested and taken to court more than 25 people. And every time they arrest a person, they say, now we have got the culprit. But the matter has continued in spite of so many people being in jail. So we are still confused. I think that's why some Muslims are saying that they want the intervention of maybe FBI or Scotland Yard, you know, because they think our police has failed. Because the police seems to have reached their end of wits, because they have already arrested so many people since January. They have taken them to court. They have not yet been tried. But it would have been understood that, you see, if they already had the culprits in jail, the murders would have stopped. But in spite of these arrests to date, three clerics have been killed and there has been an attempt to...
Some Muslim youth are calling on the government to step up the protection of Muslim clerics because they say the government has yet to do enough to protect Muslim clerics who are also citizens of the country.
The government gives general protection to every citizen. It becomes very hard to protect an individual. So I think what is needed is to find who hates these clerics and who wants them dead. If we discovered that one and found a solution to it, it's much cheaper than protecting these people. Because how many of them will you protect? Because they claim that there is a list. It's true, some people have, in that list, that alleged list, have been killed. But how do you know that people who are not on that list may also be a target? We don't know, because how authoritative is that list? So it's very hard to say that only the people who are on the list should be given protection. In my opinion, they need to find the culprits. They need to find who is behind this. And there's a lot of intelligence. Giving protection to individual sheikhs is not enough.
The murder or assassination of these clerics, some people are saying, is creating panic in the Muslim community because they are not sure who is next. Has there been an emergency attached to the investigation of this assassination of these clerics to bring these culprits to book?
Well, I think the police is trying its best. Really, I'm sure the head of police and even the whole of government is trying its best. But I think their best is not good enough. They need the assistance of other intelligence organizations, maybe FBI, I wouldn't rule it out. They have been better at this, MI5, Scotland Yard, and others. Of course, there is cooperation in East Africa now. As a community, there's a policy of cooperation and security. I'm sure they are using all those sorts of avenues to find a solution, but it is taking too long and we are all worried, yes.
Ladislaw Rakafuzi is a Ugandan human rights lawyer. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Authorities in Kenya are trying to get rid of illicitly brewed alcohol following a recent spate of deaths. The government has announced a 4-day campaign and also revoked all licenses for bars and other outlets selling home brew, which can be laced with methanol. Homemade alcohol is popular in central Kenya, where many people cannot afford to buy commercial alcohol. Kevin Omolo is a correspondent for the Standard Media Group. My colleague Douglas Impoga reached him in Kisumu to find out the people's reaction.
In Kisumu, we've never had cases of people dying from illicit brew. People are very reluctant. They are not into raiding like it is happening in other parts of the country, especially in central Kenya.
So are you saying the local brew in Kisumu is different from the one in central Kenya? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, w- what is happening, even from the NACADA, that's the body which contains the illicit brew in the country, they are saying that there is a little bit of poisoning, especially in central Kenya, where brewers add methane to the alcohol. They call it kill me quick. And kill me quick means people want to get drunk very fast. So people, the brewers add something, some substance which is a little bit poisonous. And this has been causing the death. But in Western Kenya, where we have Nyanza and Western provinces, illicit brew is widespread, and people feel it is not justified to clear illicit brew because they have not seen any negative impact the illicit brew has been causing on people. We have Busa, we have Changa. Some people depend on it and as a livelihood, and it has never caused such a reaction because there is no death which has been reported.
This brew is cheap and it's a bit addictive. So how tough is it a job to make people get off this type of brew?
There have always been concerns that the formal brews are very expensive. So this has been forcing people to go to the cheaper one. And to make it cheaper, people try to use substances which are not approved. And these substances have been the things which are causing death. But in other parts, they really don't call it illicit brew, but they call it traditional brew. In other parts of the country, especially in Western Kenya, they feel the traditional brews have no issue and they are safe. Previously, we had the government using various agencies have the traditional brews checked so that it is ensured they are safe for consumption.
Is there a government can come up with a formula of controlling and making sure that these drinks are not harmful?
One, it is very difficult for the government to control them because the new alcoholic law which was introduced in Kenya, and this law, it talks about time that you can consume alcohol, which was minimized. And in Kenya, it is between 2 p.m. to 11 p.m., that is on weekends and holidays. Then on weekdays, it is between 5 p.m. and 11 p.m. And one of the issues people have been raising is that you look at the impact of this on people, they think it is not contributing negatively to their economic power, especially the traditional brew. But in case the government gets in to control this brew, it comes with additional costs, because when they have to regulate it, there are measures that they want these people to abide by. And these measures, we need investment because it talks about how to package it. It talks about taxing them. This one makes people to at least increase the price of the brews. And the increase in the price of the brews is what is driving people to go to the cheaper ones, which they get backdoors, which are laced with some substances which are not healthy.
Kevin Omolo is a correspondent for the Standard Media Group in Kenya. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kisumu.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, the political crisis in South Sudan is taking a heavy toll on the nation's citizens. Nearly 2 million people have been displaced due to the fighting between supporters of President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar. Tune in on Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all. On VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Tolte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our African collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. Right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today, Independence Day. If we remember, baby, oh na na, baby, oh na na, baby, oh na na, oh na na na, baby, oh na na, baby, oh na na, baby, oh na na, oh na 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 na. Waza moti moti moti, sikia. Na shitwa kijoti na umi Mulu wangu ti, ti, ti unakimbia Woga wama noti noti na umi Susi chini ya chakanani Tumia sana Umiani Utani umiza Na itache kwa nitani Unangalia mama Wengine tena sinapo Jina hasi Baby
Chaco kwangu maradhi matu usonone kapo kwangu simanzi. Ai, tato kidonda chako kwangu maradi. Oh yani usonone kapo kwangu simanzi. Kwa mahaba ulonipa, nimenogewa. Vurugu patashika, ai, punguza kidogo. Na mingine kadhalika, toto suna nyelewa. Apo apo liposhika, ukiongeza kidogo.
I'm busting.
dedication to all the women out there. Na who man go there? Mr. Wing, play on this one.
Anything where you dey do, my brother, dey. Woman go dey,
for sure.
I say woman go dey. If you invite purpose to your party, then go ask you whether woman go dey,
for sure.
She be woman go dey. She na woman dey make you dey.
Take it one day, take it one day, take it one.
Na woman dey make you dey.
Take it one day, take it one day, take it one.
She be na woman dey make you dey.
Take it one day, take it one day, take it one.
She na woman dey make you dey.
Take it one day, take it one day, take it one.
Still emphasizing, just the analyzing, hypnotizing is the hidden strength of a woman. Try looking at you, not killing ghosts. You go make plenty sense if you roll my boat. Tumwa bukwan eba no eh. African baby oh eh. Una ula no ula no ula no ula no no di endao do. From the garden of Eden, she don't dey no be today. Beauty they brought they throw away. Boys don't dey ligi maro. Amalija baby oh eh. With the message of the
show. Anything where you dey. My brother, eh, woman go there,
for sure.
I say woman go there. If you invite purpose to your party, then go ask you whether woman go there,
for sure.
She be woman go there. She a woman they make you dey.
Take it one day, take it one day, take it one.
A woman they make you dey.
Take it one day,
take it one day,
take it one.
She be a woman they make you dey.
Take it one day,
take it one day,
take it one.
She a woman they make you dey.
Take it one day, take it one day, take it one.
The woman go there. It's more begin they cry, yeah, eh. The woman go there, yeah. If hunger they for town, yeah, eh. The woman be say man go succeed or he go fail, yeah, eh.
Don't underestimate my power,
As for my beautiful lady, me I go love you, wellu, wellu. I go to you, sorry, sorry. Make we they go, I'm gonna get my paro. Cause without you, baby, man, I'm so lonely, yeah. Anything where you they do, my brother.
For sure.
I say woman go there. If you invite purpose to your party, then go ask you whether woman go there.
For sure.
She be woman go there. She a woman they make you dey.
Take it one day,
take it one day,
take it one day.
A woman they make you dey.
Take it one day,
take it one day,
take it one.
She be a woman they make you dey.
Take it one day,
take it one day,
take it one.
She a woman they make you dey.
Take it one day,
take it one day,
take it one.
Just feeling, mama, 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 mama,
shop the banana. Come and shop the banana.
From the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It's always a pleasure for me to give my reflections on U.S. policy towards Africa, simultaneously pay close attention to African opinions on and attitudes towards the United States. This week, there are a number of issues relating to America's relations with Africa. Most of these issues are really based on American political realities, because the most important legislative juridical body in the United States is the Supreme Court, and decisions by the Supreme Court of the United States has implications for Americans, but it has consequences for other people dealing with the United States. When the Supreme Court of the United States decided to give legitimacy to the gay movement in the United States, this was unprecedented in American history. From the founding fathers with George Washington all the way to President Barack Hussein Obama, you have a new revolution. This is going to affect America's relations with the rest of the world. It is true that the gay movement is global, and South Africa, among the African countries, has been the most faithful to them in terms of legislation, constitutional provisions. So South Africa was ahead of the United States in respecting the gay groups. But today, when America moves the way it is doing, you are going to see how American policy is going to reverberate in African relations with the United States. Already, before the decision of the Supreme Court to give validity to the gay groups, there were opposition to gay activities throughout the continent of Africa. In Uganda, Museveni has been very much opposed to the gay groups. So has been President Mugabe of Zimbabwe. And, of course, in West Africa, the most vocal is President Yahya Jammeh of the Gambia. And, of course, anyone who is looking at this development with regard to American policy towards Africa and African opinions on and attitude towards the United States, the gay issue is going to be big-time issue in the next years during the Obama administration and beyond the Obama administration. This is one of the legacies of Obama after his term of duty, and it will be remembered with regard to U.S.-Africa relations. The other point that is relevant with regard to U.S. policy towards Africa is the question of AGOA. AGOA was a legacy of Bill Clinton, and with Obama, AGOA has another 10-year life. So even after Obama, whoever is the president of the United States, Republican or Democrat, will inherit AGOA. There are three issues with regard to AGOA and African relations. The former president of Senegal, Abdoulaye Wade, has been one of the strongest advocates for African benefits from AGOA. That was one of his undoing, because he pushed hard and tried to see to what extent the African countries could benefit from AGOA with regard to the cotton trade. There are some African countries that are in cotton production. Chinese are making money out of it by selling headwater to America and the rest of the world. And the African countries were not able to develop themselves to the point that AGOA was working for the Africans from an industrial point of view, because the Africans did not develop their own industries to negotiate with America through AGOA. And of course, countries like Lesotho and some other small African countries like Mauritius were able to benefit because they developed linkages with Chinese and some other manufacturing companies. So AGOA is an issue, and it's going to be in the debate in the coming years. If President Obama is to convene an oil summit, AGOA is going to be on the table. So when you summarize this narrative with regard to the gay issues with African countries, and you talk about African governments and their opinions or attitudes toward the United States, AGOA is an important issue if Africans can develop industries to engage America the way it was originally conceptualized. The African governments are facing the problems of governance. The gay issue will be a problem for them so long as the opposition parties in African countries are not able to mobilize themselves to confront their dictatorships, regardless of which African country you're talking about. And so long as they are not able to go back to square one and negotiate for peaceful transition of power, like they did in Nigeria recently, the problem of AGOA or gay issues handled issues at all. The key issue for the African countries is to govern themselves responsibly, and to our politicians who are not corrupt to the point that they rock the boat in their own societies. And that's the way it is, as I see America's policy towards Africa and African opinions on and attitudes towards the United States for the week. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, John Dryden. We say a big thank you for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, no matter how beautiful and well-crafted a coffin might look, it will not make anyone wish for death. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Self-government, that is, a people exercising all the necessary functions of power without interference by a higher authority that they can't control themselves, is a core American value. It's also at the heart of the Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate today. Thomas Jefferson, the document's primary author, wrote that self-rule is the separate and equal station that a people are entitled to under the laws of God and nature. It didn't come easily. America's early history is marked by conflict with other countries threatened by Republican government and among Americans themselves over the ultimate form that that government would take. But the Declaration laid the framework for a nation that would endure and grow, inspiring similar independence movements around the world. When war first broke out between Britain and its North American colonists, few imagined, let alone supported, the creation of a new nation. Historians note that even as the fighting raged, the colonists were deeply divided over the future. Roughly a third came to believe a complete break with Britain was needed. A third remained loyal to the British crown, and a third simply wanted to be left alone to raise their families and do their jobs. The 56 men who signed the Declaration on July 4, 1776, cast the first votes for independence. Their fellow citizens ratified the choice, and with it the then radical principle that government should be based on the consent of the governed. While this is the event and cause we celebrate today, it isn't unique to Americans. It is embodied in the constitutions of many nations and observed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that we all recognize. In essence, then, Independence Day is a celebration of our common humanity.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.